In Prague yesterday, the Taoiseach accepted UK bona fides in protocol talks after meeting Prime Minister Truss. In Dublin, Tánaiste Dlia Varadkar expressed the opinion that the protocol was a little too strict. And in London, Foreign Affairs Minister Simon Coveney hosted his new UK counterpart, Foreign Secretary James Cleverly, at a working dinner at the Irish Embassy. And for more on all these diplomatic moves, Minister Simon Coveney, good morning to you.
Morning, Anya.
You tweeted out a picture and a message after your meeting with Mr. Cleverly. There were smiles. You said it was a pleasure. There was the two fags, the handshake. Yet you spoke about issues of cooperation. So the mood music has changed. Has the substance?
Well, I think, to be honest, time will tell on that. But certainly, I think the relationships are changing, and there's effort on both sides to improve trust between Dublin and London on what is a very difficult issue to resolve, the outstanding issues on the Northern Ireland Protocol. But you know, last night was another step that was positive. The Foreign Secretary and I discussed a whole range of things, from cooperation of the Security Council to views on Ukraine, but spent most of the time, as you would expect, talking initially privately and then with our teams about how we can find a way through the differences of opinion and different approaches towards trying to solve the outstanding issues on the protocol, which are so polarizing still for politics in Northern Ireland and currently continue to prevent the formation of an executive and a functioning assembly. So, you know, I think there is certainly a new air of positivity, and I think that has created a flicker of optimism in the context of people asking the question, can these issues be resolved, and if so, when? So, you know, today we have a formal meeting with the British government. It's the British-Irish Intergovernmental Conference. Minister Helen McEntee is here with me, and we're meeting Chris Heaton-Harris, the new Secretary of State for Northern Ireland, who chairs this this structure with me, and also Steve Baker, of course, who in recent weeks has recognised that some of some of his contributions towards solving Brexit problems haven't been helpful in the past, and he's looking to effectively try to create a new start with the Irish government, recognising that we have genuine interests that need to be taken account of. So, you know, there's a lot of warm language at the moment. I don't think we should get carried away with that, but I certainly think we should recognise that there is a genuine effort coming from this new team in the British government to try to reach out to Dublin and indeed to Brussels, and sending the signal that they're up for a serious discussion to try to resolve these issues. But time will tell whether, of course, the compromises necessary to get a deal are possible.
Do you agree with Tánaiste Dlia Varadkar that the protocol is too strict, that it's working without being fully implemented? Were unionist politicians right all along?
Well, no, I mean, I don't. I think people are making a lot of those comments. I mean, I think it's clear because of the compromises that have come from the EU in recent months that they're willing to look at more flexibility and support a lot more flexibility in terms of how the protocol is implemented than was the position at the start. So, you know, Leo is right on that, and I think that is part of, you know, the EU's messaging that, look, we know that this at the outset was something that was going to be difficult to implement, and, you know, Maros Sefcovic, who's the key negotiator on the EU side, has already published a number of papers to show that the EU is willing to be a lot more flexible. So I think, you know, Leo is just stating a fact.
There's a risk here, isn't there, that a strategy London has tried to pursue really from the get-go of kind of negotiating separately with Dublin rather than with Brussels. Is that a risk in all this talking that's going on at the moment?
I know. I mean, I think we've been around too long for that. You know, I speak to Maros Sefcovic every week. I'll be speaking to him again today after the BWIGC meeting. So we're very close to the EU team, and I can assure you Ireland isn't going to go off and do some sort of separate deal. You know, we are part of the EU negotiating team. We're very close to its leadership in terms of Vice President Sefcovic. I think the British government understands and know that. But certainly the Irish government is a player here. You know, ultimately the agreement needs to be made and finalised between London and Brussels. But of course, the Irish government is very much part of the EU team, and of course, talking to the UK government ministers about the kind of compromises that that everybody can live with.
I want to talk to you about Ukraine as well, Minister, but just finally on the protocol. Of course, the Northern Ireland Protocol Bill, the UK proposed legislation on that, that's still before, that's still extant in Westminster. In the system, is that a problem?
Well, look, I mean, I think the EU has made it very clear, and we've supported that position, that if that Northern Ireland Protocol Bill becomes law, that'll effectively be the end of the protocol.
But its passage through Parliament isn't a problem. It's only if it becomes law.
So I think, but I don't think we should focus on it right now. You know, this is a bill that's not going to become law anytime soon. It's passed its first stages in the House of Commons. It needs to go into the House of Lords. We know that there are many Lords that have real reservations with that piece of legislation, so we expect it to be stuck in the system for quite some time. That gives us a window of opportunity to negotiate an outcome that doesn't involve unilateral action or unilateral legislation, which, as I've said many times, would cause an awful lot more problems than it will solve. And so I think the focus, to be fair, on all sides, the British government, the Irish government, and the European Commission, is to effectively ignore that legislation for now and to focus on honest, real dialogue, which we haven't had, by the way, since February, to try to make a breakthrough here. And, of course, some of the dates that are coming up focus our attention on the need to make a breakthrough, because, of course, if we haven't made some progress by the 28th of October, then the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland is obliged to set a date for new elections in Northern Ireland if the executive isn't up and running at that point, which, of course, will take us backwards, because an election in Northern Ireland will polarise opinion again and make compromise a lot more difficult. So there is there's a real focus now in terms of the deadlines that are coming in the next few weeks to try and make progress.
Yesterday morning, Minister, on the programme, we heard from Brian Maher. He was injured in Ukraine on the same Kharkiv front line where Rory Mason lost his life. Is the Irish government, do you plan to be involved in assisting him to come home?
Well, we're already involved in that, and there is what's called a medevac, which the Irish government and the EU are involved in to ensure that Brian can get home. And my understanding is that's moving well. And of course, in relation to Rory Mason, we are working with the Ukrainian authorities and with his family to bring his remains home as well. I spoke to Rory's father yesterday. He asked for privacy, and I want to respect that. So I don't want to go into any further details, if that's okay.
Does your department know how many other Irish citizens are fighting in Ukraine?
Well, we have a very active and busy embassy in Kyiv, and we're working with a number of consular cases. But again, I don't think it's helpful for me to go into the details of consular cases in Ukraine.
I know the.
What I would like to say, though, Anya, is that the government's public messaging on this is very, very clear. We're strongly advising against anybody traveling to Ukraine. This is a country at war. It's a country that we're helping in every way we can in terms of helping Ukrainians to protect themselves in the face of Russian aggression. But our strong advice is that people should not be traveling to Ukraine. It's a very dangerous place, and we've seen, unfortunately, the tragic consequences of that for Irish citizens in recent days.
Indeed, and the litany of injuries that Brian Maher described to us yesterday, but he also described his guilt almost in coming back and not being able to go back to the fighting. And given, how strongly Ireland has shown its support for Ukraine, for all the official advice, do you understand why people like Brian Maher, like Rory Mason, do make that choice to go and fight for Ukraine?
I do, and I heard Brian's interview with you yesterday, and also speaking to Rory Mason's father. He's a father that's very proud of his son in terms of his bravery, his courage, his principle, and what drove him to Ukraine. And he should be very proud of his son. But I have a responsibility to give very clear messaging to Irish people. Ukraine is not a place where people should be traveling. We are providing a lot of help to Ukraine through various different means. But I strongly advise against Irish people travelling to fight in the war.
Thank you for your time this morning. That's Foreign Affairs Minister Simon Coveney.